Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Queer Talk, a queer podcast that brings you a regular dose of positive news stories and fabulous interviews.
Hi! Hi.
Welcome back, listeners, to another joy-filled episode of Queer Talk, where we share positive LGBTQ plus news stories and celebrate our community.
Talking about celebrating our community, today we're joined by our dear friend Daniel. Daniel Harding is a journalist, presenter, and news producer. He regularly writes about LGBTQIA plus issues, and his writing has appeared in Attitude, Cosmopolitan, The London Economic, and The Mirror.
Daniel has just launched his first book, Gay Man Talking, and we are very excited to be celebrating his new book. I think by the time you listen to this, the book won't yet have been launched, but we will have attended Daniel's book launch. So watch this space, and at the end of this episode, head to all the links to purchase your own copy. Welcome to the show, Daniel.
Hi, thanks for having me. Long time.
The good thing about having you here is you can tell us when the book is out. So when is the book out?
The book's out on the 21st of September. So yep, it's very exciting this month.
And are you quite busy at the moment, like going and promoting and talking about the book, I guess, to everyone? Are you tired of it yet?
How many times have I read this book? I'm very, very busy. At the moment, I'm going all around, obviously bookshops, but also doing features, interviews, articles and stuff, which is very foreign to me because I'm usually the one doing the question asking. I'm in your position, guys. Yeah, this is all very foreign and new, and I'm trying to not ask questions and just answer them and just be responsive, which isn't great.
Based on knowing you offline, I love that you've been put in this position, because the first time we met in person, I think every time we meet in person, actually, it's like an interview. This is something that I think you're well known for, and you just ask questions. It's not even that you drill, but you're so curious as a person, which is why you're perfect as a journalist and the perfect person to write this book. But yeah, I'm glad that you're being put in the hot seat now.
Yeah, my friends never introduce me to their new loves straight away, because they know that they're going to get grilled. So
I mean, that's a great trait to have. Like, if you're going to date someone, get Daniel in and find out all the skeletons in their closets.
I think there's a new book in this, actually.
Oh, God. Yeah. We want crediting for the idea. We'll be on the blurb.
Absolutely.
Gay Man Talking is a fantastic book. I think I wasn't sure what to expect when you announced to me that you were writing it, when you spoke to both myself and Mufseen about being in the book. But each chapter explores a very different relationship that you've had, whether that be with parents, with body issues, with bullies, and even with yourself. So my question is, to start with, what drew you to these topics? And a sub question, is there anything that was left out that you feel should have been included?
To be honest, I think what started was I was interviewing someone and just chatting about things. And I kept on saying all the sort of stuff that, you know, you sweep under the carpet, or you have that conversation with someone about coming out, and then you move forward quite quickly and don't really address it again. And it sort of sparked this feeling inside about, oh gosh, did I ever actually talk to my dad again about coming out? Or did I ever actually talk to my friend about how they felt about the fact that I'm gay? And all of these things started happening. And I just so happened to be speaking to a publisher and discussing. And we decided that, yeah, this is definitely a topic that I don't think we have enough of those conversations once we've come out. And there's certainly conversations that you kind of wish you had, but you avoid because they're cringe or awkward or whatever. So I decided to have them. And I think basically what I did was head to the conversations that I really didn't want to have and essentially try and have them. And that those were things like obviously talking to my parents. I didn't want to talk to my parents at all about it. I'm in a really good place with my parents. I didn't want to readdress or open new wounds. But unfortunately, that's exactly what sort of the book is encouraging people to do, to sort of unpick those relationships that might be okay or that you haven't sort of addressed for a while, and really like refocus and go back to them and have those conversations, as awkward and scary as they may be. But yeah, I was drawn to conversations that I didn't want to have, basically. And there's lots of things that I left out, lots of conversations I could have had and I didn't.
Are you willing to reveal any of those things to us? Even just topic headline.
Well, for example, there was this debate on whether to have, in the book, there's a chapter on love, which is a huge, obviously, thing in everyone's lives. There was this huge debate on, do I have it or not? Because it meant having a conversation with an ex. And I went through my Rolodex and I was thinking, oh, who do I actually want to have this conversation with? And I really wanted to actually have it with someone who I didn't want to have it with, because that's the whole purpose of it. And yeah, so that didn't happen. I didn't have that conversation because that person, I'm not sure if I should say, but basically declined.
So you were kind of willing to have a conversation with an ex?
I think it went something like, sorry, you hurt me and now you want to speak about it. Absolutely not.
Again, like maybe for the sequel.
Yeah, I think it's fair. I think it kind of highlights the need for, whilst these conversations are important, I think both sides or all parties involved need to consent to having that conversation, right? Because it can be really intense and different people have different reasons for not wanting to discuss things, like this example. You've had enough good conversations. So the book is full and complete, but I'm excited to see what happens in a potential book two.
I think that was the hardest part, actually, because when you have the conversations and you have all of those chats, and then that's one thing that's done and that's logged. Obviously, then you've got to write them up and put them into a chapter for people to read. Mm. But then you've also then got to reapproach those people who you've had the conversation a couple of months later and get them to sign a form to saying, yes, we'll be in the book without seeing the chapter.
Yeah.
Which is a really hard part. So thanks for your consent forms.
When it comes to the chapters in your book, there is one chapter dedicated to sex. So you skip love, but you went straight for sex. The opening talks about the first time, which can be uncomfortable for so many. How did you go about researching this chapter about sex? Did you have to have a lot of sex?
Did I have to have a lot of sex? Yes, I forced myself. The thing is, I don't know about you too, but for me growing up, sex was a very much a swear word, especially in my house. That we didn't really speak about it. It was something that was an uncomfortable subject that no one really wanted to discuss. So I kind of have grown up with that sort of prudish mentality, which I'm really trying to ditch as I go forward in life. I think, like, for me, approaching that subject again was important because I feel, for good or for bad, sex is a huge part of our community. I mean, we're tarnished with it, we're adored by it, we're loved for it or we're hated for it, and slated. I mean, look at monkeypox right now.
Yeah.
But I think sex is a really important subject to have, because obviously sexuality and what we're discussing, sex is in there. So I had to obviously do it, but it was uncomfortable because I knew that I wasn't sure if I wanted that conversation. And also I remember speaking to the publisher and thinking, who can I have this conversation with? Because do you have a conversation with the first person you had sex with? Do you have a conversation with a sex therapist or someone who's sex positive? Or because I guess for myself, I love sex. I think that everyone should obviously embrace what they love. But I guess on the spectrum, sounds really boring maybe to some, but maybe I'm a bit more vanilla rather than the rocky road.
Spencer's trying to keep a straight face while you say you're vanilla.
Are you not vanilla, Spencer?
I'll give my 2p when you're finished. Carry on. Talk to me about ice cream flavours. I'm always up for that.
Okay, so, and then I just decided, like, I have to go all in. And I think that's the only way I could have done this chapter. It was an open mind. And, you know, I have friends who would attend sex parties or have three ways or open relationships or are very sex positive, which I think is fantastic. And then I have friends who are more reserved, want to have intimacy, want to date before they have sex, want to have sex in different ways. And I actually think that when I was researching all these different ways and the very much the colourful ways we can have sex, it just dawned on me that actually you have to just be open and embrace everything. And if it's not for you, that's fine. But I think it's our duty to research and listen. Like, I don't think we listen enough to other people. We're very judgmental. And this chapter was really important to actually listen for a change. And sometimes I'm guilty of that and I don't. So when I sat down with Jason, who's an absolutely lovely, he's had a very colourful past as a UK porn star. And he's a very confident sex worker. And he's so sex positive. And he spoke about so many incredible things, a porn film for PrEP and advertising PrEP, which was just fantastic. And he's an advocate for obviously sex positive and sex workers' rights. And listening to a man talk about and discuss sex so openly, so transactionally, but also the love side of it as well, was just a breath of fresh air. And it's just making me, like, for a long time I said sex, as I say, like a swear word. And hearing people say about sex, you kind of get that, like, oh, can't talk about sex. And it was really refreshing. I had the chat and it was fascinating, actually. And it's interesting to hear his point of view. And I hope people enjoy that chapter and enjoy the chat, because it does open your mind to acceptance. And I think that's something that we really do need. Like, sex is about accepting ourselves, our passion, what we love. And you can't fully accept whichever part of our community you are unless you also accept the sex as well. We shouldn't be ashamed.
It would almost be weird to write a book about gay men having conversations without sex. I don't mean that in a crude way. I just mean, like you said just earlier, like, it's such a big part of our community. You know, we are a community based on being a sexual minority. But yeah, Jason is amazing. He really fights for sex workers' rights. And a lot of that is about normalizing, I believe, like, the fact that, you know, porn industry, sex industry has always existed. It's always been a part of kind of normal life for straight and gay and bi people. And they deserve just as many rights when they go to work as we have.
There's certain subjects that you think, oh, I can't talk about that with my friends, or like different things. And there'll be friends that you do talk about things to and friends that you don't. And it was just refreshing as well to be able to be like, okay, yeah, we masturbate. Oh, that's okay. Like, you're allowed to, like, say that out loud, and like, that's fine. Like, you're allowed to enjoy that. You're allowed to have sex. You're allowed to do sex in whichever way you want. And it's crazy that you sort of are grown up treading on eggshells, like, thinking you can't.
Around your parents, like, my parents would literally switch the TV channel if someone was kissing on EastEnders. And like, that's the level of, you know, censorship I don't really want to give to anyone. But, you know, they're kind of, this is why we have queer friends, and, like, you know, we have a different language, and that a lot of that language is based on honesty. Like, you know, you talk to a friend about douching and stuff. Like, do straight men have that conversation? I don't think so.
100%. So to touch on that, this is the longest I've ever been silent on an episode of Queer Talk, which is wild.
Yes, Daniel, you should come back more often.
I don't know if I've ever said this out loud, but it's definitely the case. But sex for me was something similar to you, Daniel, that it was like something I would avoid talking about at all costs, because I was like, you know, you do that little giggle when someone says sex and you like blush a little bit. You're like, oh my God, sex. Like, that's what, you know, what are people doing? What are people getting up to? What should I be doing? And actually, Muffscene, you were one of the first friends where I felt open enough to talk about testing and to like talk about sex, because you're quite sex positive and very open online. It was really weird for me because I've only ever had two sexual partners, right? Which is, I think, pretty rare in our community. And I didn't know about testing. I didn't know about STIs. I didn't know about any of these things. And I didn't know who to talk to about it. Like, I genuinely had no idea. Like, I don't know where you go to learn without scrolling the internet. And I didn't want to scroll the internet because it's like very overwhelming and daunting. Me and Muffscene didn't explicitly sit down to have a conversation around sex. But
I did the bird and the bees with Spencer. So Spencer, this is how it happens.
This is how to make a baby. It was just really interesting to have that conversation, because another thing I want to touch on is, I think we have this assumption in our community that people are having a lot of sex, or like some people are having sex every single day and it's wild, and they're having sex for hours and they're doing all these crazy things where they're like tying each other up and doing this and doing that and all these kinks. And like, whilst all of those things happen and take place, that just isn't the reality. And I think there's this expectation for us to be sexual, but also to always be up for it and always to be ready and always to be horny. And those things just aren't the case. And I think I, for one, definitely put a lot of like shame on myself for not being a super sexualized being, because I was like, oh God, like, what's wrong with me? Like, I remember for the longest time, I thought I was asexual before I'd had sex for the first time, because I was like, God, like, I want to avoid this at all costs. Maybe it's not for me. And now sex is something that I'm very content with, something I really enjoy, and something that I'm exploring, again, because of what you said, Daniel, in terms of listening. Like, I think listening to a partner and communicating with a partner about what they like, what you dislike, elevates sex so much, because it's about being on the same wavelength as the people you're involved with. Basically, nothing more than that, to be honest. But yeah, I wanted to bring that up, because this is a conversation that I was scared of for so long, and now I'm like, it's just sex. Like, there's so many other things going on, but it's just sex.
I think that's the thing as well. Like, you raise a really good point, because I think of Grindr, and I think of the conversations I've had on Grindr before, where obviously people are on there for a variety of reasons. But if it is sex and you have those conversations and someone says, oh, when was the last time you had sex or action or like got some or whatever they want to use as the language? And so many people will be like, oh, yeah, it was yesterday, or it was like, and I don't know about other people, but I'm working. I was thinking, like, how did you fit it in? And sometimes my answer is, yeah, like 2 months, or sometimes it might be weeks, or it might have been yesterday. And I think that's really interesting, because sometimes you do think like, where are you on that spectrum, on the sextrum? Oh, is that a new
sextrum?
Oh, sextrum. But like, and where are you confident and happy to be as well? Because like, I do think obviously there are lots of people having sex probably right now, probably in this building that I'm in. There are also people who aren't having as much sex and perhaps aren't having as much as they're making out that they're having as well. But I don't know. It's interesting. However you have sex is a positive thing.
So we were both very fortunate to feature in the book. I love it when anyone asks me to talk about myself. It's the sole reason we have this podcast.
It kind of is.
It wasn't supposed to be. Anyway, we were both very fortunate to feature in the book. You wrote a chapter on bullying. And I don't know if you just came to me and asked if I knew anyone at the time, whether we had a discussion, and that led to wanting to include a bit of my story. But in short, for listeners, I was somebody who was bullied in school. And at the time, I didn't class it as bullying, because it didn't look like bullying to me. And then someone who basically became a bully as a result of that, someone who felt very empowered to bring everyone around me down so that I was safe, and so that I was in a place where no one could hurt me, which as a result just meant that I was hurting other people. And this is the first time that I've had that conversation, because whilst I knew that that was who I was and that was part of my past, it was something that I definitely felt ashamed of, because hurting anyone for me today is not who I am. So it was actually a really, really uncomfortable conversation, but one that flowed really naturally. I really enjoyed our conversation. The question here, I was getting to that, to the question, is like, what was it that stood out from that conversation we had? Because obviously it's a small part of a wider chapter, and you talked about your own experiences in that chapter. But from that conversation in particular, like, what was it that stood out? Maybe something that you weren't expecting to come up, or something that kind of opened your eyes?
Yeah, I think, first of all, I think we had a discussion, and I think like a lot of things I come to you, Spencer, and say, oh, do you know anyone for this? Or do you know someone that went through this? And I think you actually opened up and said, obviously your experience? And I said, oh gosh, that's so interesting, because it's very rare. I think I discussed this in the chapter, but I think a bully to so many people can be one thing and look like another, but actually a bully comes in all different guises. It's a very much a personal thing, I think. And it's not just that sort of kids, that chubby kid in school who goes around pulling people's pants up or whatever, but it's also so many different things. And I think after you said, well, I was actually a bully, that is shocking in itself, to have that sort of statement, knowing you and knowing what you do with your platform now. It's such a difference and such a turnaround. So I was really interested and probably persisted a little bit too much to have you feature. So thank you for your consent. And yeah, and then having that discussion, I sort of approached it like I did every conversation I had, just ready to be open and hear whatever you've got to sort of share and say. When you started opening up, at first I think you was a bit closed. I mean, I've got the video if you want to watch it back ever.
Absolutely not.
But at first I think you was a bit closed. Like many conversations I had, they all started off quite tense, and then you relaxed into it and you opened up and you spoke your truth. And I think for me, what shocked me the most is the fact that you became a bully because you were bullied, or you felt like you had to survive. And I think that's what a lot of bullies do. I think they bully because they feel that that's their option to survive, to not get bullied themselves, to fit in. There's lots of different reasons. And I think for me, you opening up about becoming the bully was more powerful than if I was to sit down with my high school bully and hear from them. This is still something that clearly affects you and shapes the rest of your life, which I think is actually the most incredible thing to have in the chapter, because not only have you been there, you've been bullied, you've bullied, you've come out the other side and you're teaching people. So we can all learn a lot from this chapter, actually. And I think for me, what I learn is that every bully, no matter what you've gone through, deserves sort of that second chance. And I know obviously there are definite levels of bullying, but I think that not every bully is doing it because they want to hurt someone, or they've got like a mission to destroy someone. They're doing it for survival. And I think that that's often, especially if you're in a minority group, why you might be doing it.
Yeah. I mean, as a result of that kind of that conversation and even that kind of chapter in my life, I find it really powerful to go back to difficult conversations a day later, a week later, a year later, whatever, and readdress and like reflect on what was said and like what you actually mean, because so many things are said in the moment for impact or for humor or just for like dramatic effect. And like, I can be, you know, if I'm tipsy or if I'm like with a group of friends, like I can be really giddy and really loud and just say things. And then I sit and I go, oh my God, like, why would I ever say that like out loud? Or like, that's so insensitive to the people I was around, or any of these things. So I think it's really important to try and go back. Like your whole book is based on the fact you're kind of going back to conversations that you've once had and then rehaving conversations. And there's so much power in that, because often we have a difficult conversation and we just kind of sign off and we're like, cool, that's the conversation done, let's move on. And things don't end after one conversation, right? It's ongoing, and people have thoughts and feelings after that. And you always leave a conversation going, oh, like I wish I said that, you know, like after an argument, you're like, oh God, I would have, you know, shut them right down if I'd said this. And it's like, I wish we would spend more time reflecting on conversations and being comfortable with each other to do that as well.
I think there's a part, especially in your chapter, where you say you had this moment of realization where you were about to go and get beaten up, I think you thought, and you had a choice. You either became tough and showed confidence, or you went and got your head flushed down the toilet, essentially. And you had that sort of like that turning point, that sliding doors moment, that you could have chosen one route or gone another. And instead of continuing to be bullied, you decided to become the bully to obviously survive. And I think that's a lot of the time what this community is doing, is trying to survive.
As a result of that happening in school, like that has framed who I am, and now this level of confidence and like authority that I have to have, like as much as I try and be a nice person, like that also has impact, right? Like even to Mina Mufsin's relationship, there are certain situations where I'm like, no, I'm doing this way because I think I'm right. And it's really difficult to step down from that and to take a step back and go, right, like, what's actually happening? But again, from having those conversations, like, I wouldn't say that I bully Mufsy.
Just on record, I want to say I don't think you bully me. I was just joking.
There's absolutely no bullying. It's a mutual back and forth. But it's true, like, those things shape who you are, and you have to take some realization to go, like, right, I'm not a bully anymore. But there were certain aspects of that in terms of, like, gaining confidence and gaining, like, self-awareness and just being sure of who I was. Like, that's important, and you can keep those elements. You just don't have to bring other people down to be yourself.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You also featured Mufsy.
I did feature, and thank you, Daniel, for having me in your book. Kind of spoke a little bit about my parents and kind of a little bit about my upbringing, the kind of the status of my relationship with my parents. And I think what became quite evident was that, you know, it's not been an easy ride sometimes when you think about it and you talk to friends about it and you realize, oh, wait, did I really go through that? And, you know, my relationship with my parents is a bit strained. It's a bit formal. It's not as, you know, loving and intimate as other, you know, parents are with their children. And that's not, you know, that's not untypical for an Asian household to kind of be like that, especially when you're queer and you're from a Muslim background and, you know, a lot of things at play there. So there is a bit in the book about my story, and it's very interesting to have read the book and to see your side as well. Like, your relationship with your parents, you go into a lot of detail about how coming out and then being the gay son was for you with your mum, you and your dad. But yeah, I think everyone's going to have a very different experience growing up, and that's, parenting is so difficult, honestly.
So difficult.
And I think you capture that really well in that chapter. What did you take away from our conversation, Daniel?
Do you know what? The parenting chapter, I thought, I needed to get it out of the way quite quickly. And having, obviously, interviews with my own parents was quite frankly awful. but I really encourage people to have that chat if you can, and if you're in that place with your parents, because there are so many things that you don't know that they went through or that they thought at the time. And it's so important to get both sides of the story, because it actually, you can understand perhaps some of their actions during that period as well. Mm. And then for me, it was so important that I didn't just have my point of view in this chapter, because like you say, so many people are going to have different experiences, especially different backgrounds and different upbringings. And obviously sitting down with you, I remember it well.
me too.
I knew it was going to be an awkward conversation, in the sense of, I knew that there were going to be things that I wouldn't be able to relate to. I also knew that it would be quite moving. And I mean, still reading back the chat we had, it moves me. And obviously during our chat, my eyes did well up, and I felt for you and what you went through. And I think that the one thing I took away is, regardless of where you are now, and I know that you continue to sort of pursue your relationships there, but regardless of where that leads you or where you go, I think that your strength came through so much, and you'd made peace with the situation, even if it does change in the future. And I think that's something that really, like, inspired me as well, to realize that there are going to be conversations that you have. There's conversations in this book that didn't go to plan, and they're not always going to go how you want them to. We come out to people and you're not always going to get the reactions you want or hope for. And I think parents is something that we always hope are going to be that foundation that helps us and that shapes us and stuff. And I think you're incredible, to be honest, because the fact that you can make a decision to choose yourself in that situation for the better and to take that break that you need or that pause from your own sort of family for your own health and your own happiness, I think is incredible. And I think so many times we follow a path because our parents have paved it for us or people have told us this is the way we have to go. And that's not always correct for each person. And I think it's really lovely that despite what you've been through, you're so strong and you're obviously, seeing the difference between my upbringing and yours and my reaction, I feel very thankful. And I think that people hopefully would read this and either it inspires them to have that conversation or they feel thankful or they reach out to friends who perhaps haven't and be there. Because, I mean, the parent chapter also discusses the fact that parents come in all shapes and forms. Like the definition is people can act as a parent. And I think they do. I mean, your relationship, you two, like there's definitely like a parent figure there of like helping each other and stuff. And I think like, and Mustin, we discussed that, like that parents, we've all got a bit of a daddy, right?
Yeah, a little bit of a daddy. I am a bit of a daddy sometimes. Yes. I think what I said earlier is about like parenting is hard, but as you get older, you don't need to look to your parents for that kind of support, especially if they're not giving it. I think as you get older, you realize your parents aren't perfect as well. They're just people who had children. I think what I realized and what I shared with you, Daniel, was that it just got to a point where I was like, I need to stop looking to these two people to approve my life or approve, you know, something, and I need to just choose myself. And I actually do have a lot of friends in the queer community, and I think a lot of, like I said even earlier in this episode, I'm coming up with some good points, that, you know, there's this unspoken language between queer people, and that's that's how you make chosen family, you make a community, we speak in a familiarity, and there is support beyond just your parents. So it's great if you have that as a support and as a cornerstone for kind of, you know, your life. But if you don't, there's only so much you can pursue that until at some point you have to choose yourself, which is where I kind of got to a few years ago.
You also say something really powerful in your chapter where you say, like, hearing coming out stories and hearing people's coming out stories, be them different. And obviously yours and mine are very different. But there are also similarities in everyone's, and that's the emotions. We've all been through different emotions or the fear before we come out, especially to parents perhaps, of how they're going to take it. And I think you say hearing other people's is so important, and we should keep on hearing them, and we've got to keep on coming out, and we've got to keep on supporting people. And this is why frustrates me so much, and obviously the community of, oh, why do we need pride, or why do people need to come out? Because we do need to hear it in the community more than anything else, that we're supporting each other. And I think that's the other thing, that we are a family. We're not just a community. We're each other's parents sometimes when they're vacant.
This whole theme of chosen family is something I think in more recent years, having had conversations between myself and Mufseen, is so vital. Like, you get different things from different people, and being surrounded by as many different people as possible, like, that will raise you with the most understanding of the world and different perspectives. And like, you will become the most level-headed person if you've spoken to people who are nothing like yourself, spoken to people from different communities, different chapters of their life, different ages, different backgrounds, having been through different things. It changes everything. And I think we need to move away from this idea that our parents are like the be all and end all of like guidance, and they know best and all of this stuff. That's what gets drilled into you as a child. And I wish parents would be more honest and go like, I don't really know what to do in this situation, but I'm going to do my best. Like, that's all you really need to hear, instead of, you know, having that authority that says like, they're right, you're wrong, because that's often not the case. I think a lot of queer people have very difficult relationships with parents. And I, for one, almost resent people, or have resented people, that have good relationships with their parents, because I'm like, I just can't imagine what that would be like. You know, everyone has ups and downs, and we shouldn't compare our stories, but we should definitely share our stories, like you said.
So I like hearing other people's stories and coming out and all the other conversations that we don't have. But also, even reading your book, Daniel, when you talk about your parents and the relationship with your mum, it's just interesting to see like how other people have lived their lives being the gay son. Because like for me, I'm not asking for sympathy, but I wasn't really the gay son in a way that I had a relationship with my parents. I was just the gay son. Let's not talk about it. So can I just ask you a question, Daniel? What is GSD?
So I think when I grew up, in my head, I thought, right, I have to be a role, because I've come out now. I need to, like, my parents saw one thing in my head. And so the GSD was the gay son duties. So all those things that, like, I definitely saw, because I have straight friends or heterosexual friends, and they definitely weren't doing some of these things that I was doing. And what I realized is I was doing all these duties, what I thought that I was doing, because they expected me, or they thought, out of fear, because I thought, oh gosh, I've got to do this now, because I'm that label, I'm that person, I'm the gay son, I'll be the laugh, I'll be the, like, sort of the joke, or the butt of the joke, or whatever. And really, actually, what I realized is those duties that I were doing was actually, I was putting it on myself. Like, and some of them I did want to do, and I realized actually some of them made me closer to my parents and stuff. But having those conversations with my parents, I realized actually that they were learning, and they were learning how to parent a new person, and they were trying to show interest in some things that they'd Googled, or they thought that I might have liked and stuff. And it's really fascinating, because I was thinking one thing, I've got to be a certain way, and they were thinking one thing because they thought a certain way of what a gay person was. And in reality, what neither of us saw was a gay person is exactly the same as a straight person. You're going to like different things and stuff. It's just about a personal thing. And I think we were both being something that we weren't, which is where the chapter sort of tries and goes and says that actually, I think the child ends up becoming the parent to your parents as well. And you end up becoming the teacher, because my parents are learning from me, and I'm sort of leading the way. And it's not about the GSD, but just about being you. There is no GSD.
As we've mentioned, the book is all about having conversations, and the copies we were sent included a small envelope with conversation prompts inside, which is actually a really, really nice element of the book.
Yeah, they're really cute, like little cards, and it's all branded with Gay Man Talking, Daniel Harding.
Conversation starters.
But I think, you know, part of the reason we started this podcast, and a similar reason I think you wrote the book, was to get people talking about those conversations that can be uncomfortable, but they don't even need to be uncomfortable. Like, we should just talk about everything. I love oversharing, and I love people that overshare, because people are like, oh god, I shouldn't have said that. And I'm like, absolutely you should. Like, it gives so much context, and it makes conversation so much more plentiful.
The book is an overshare.
Literally, we've reached this point where you're just like, right, if you need to know anything about Daniel, read the book. I want to know, like, why is this so important to you? Why is having uncomfortable conversations so important to you?
I think it actually goes down to just, like, the last chapter is a conversation with myself. I think, to be honest, I think that's the most important chapter of all for everyone, to actually sit down with yourself and ask yourself, do you like yourself? Do you love yourself? All those awkward things that you actually don't really want to discuss with yourself. And I think, like, the whole reason for doing the book is you have all these conversations about coming out, and then you put them under the carpet, and you move forward and you live your life not sort of going back to them. But actually, those conversations and rehabbing those conversations, understanding other people's feelings, bringing up old feelings, like if you were bullied, or if you did want to say something to an ex, or you want to confront this feeling about straight men that you're scared of, or whatever. If you don't have all those conversations, you don't unpick them, you don't, like, sort of readdress them or actually discuss them and communicate, then you're still not 100% comfortable in moving forward with who you are. You can't have that honest conversation with yourself unless you're having all these other conversations. And I think for me, it was just so important because we come out constantly. Like, I come out every day, and regardless of if people think I'm gay or don't think I'm gay, I still have to come out and I still have to like have those conversations. And it was important for me to rehave those conversations with everyone, because I realized at 33, I'm still not comfortable with myself. I wasn't comfortable with being gay. I wasn't comfortable with having sex. I wasn't comfortable with my parents knowing that I was with a man, or I wasn't comfortable with so many different things. And it wasn't until I actually discussed them, sat down with these people, that I realized, like, one of my best friends who I had a conversation with, I didn't realize the internalized feelings that they had, how they had to like adapt to my new truth, or how they wanted to be there for me but couldn't, and I pushed them away. And one of the chapters was all about role models. And for me, I don't know about you guys, but for me, I really didn't believe in role models growing up. I thought it was myth. And I thought people who said, like, my mum was probably the best example, who she could reel off so many different role models that she had. She'd be like, oh my God, Madonna was my role model because she wore that pointed bra and made me feel like, yes, I could be sexually expressive or whatever. And then she'd say, Fern Britton, oh gosh, she's doing it for the ladies asking the questions that you want. Do you know what? She had so many examples, and I just thought, where are my role models? I just didn't see any. And even the role models, I'm ashamed to say, that were available on TV and stuff, they weren't people that I wanted to be, because I was scared of being that person. I was scared of being the outwardly confident gay guy. I was scared of being ridiculed. And I remember seeing Graham Norton on TV and thinking, my God, the canned laughter, people are laughing at him. And it really honestly freaked me out. And I just thought, I don't want to be this. I don't believe in role models. But in actually sitting down and having discussions with Daniel Newman, who uses his platform in a really incredible ways, he makes a lot of mistakes, but he also owns them. And he's really trying to like come out as an actor and be there for people. And I spoke to different other people as well in that chapter. I realized that actually role models only exist because people are pushing themselves. I mean, I feature you guys in that chapter as well, Queer Talk, because role models are everywhere and they are the people that are using the platform for the good. And I think on the whole, I wanted to do this book because I think there's so many internalized feelings that we don't address and we just sweep under the carpet. And we shouldn't. We need to find that end chapter of having that conversation with ourselves. And at the end of it, we need to ask ourselves that question, am I proud of who I am? And if you can't answer that, you need to go back and have those conversations. Because until you do, like, you need to be comfortable in yourself.
Amen.
Yes. Oh, we're going to leave it there because that was such a great way to end the interview. In order to close off our interview with you, Daniel, before we send you off into the world, we'd like to use one of your prompts against you, not against you, but from one of these conversation starters that you've sent to us with the book. I'm going to ask you one of your prompts back to you. If you could use one word to describe the LGBTQ+ community, what would it be?
Glue.
Are you talking super glue, Pritt stick?
Glue. Do you know what? In a job interview once, someone asked me to describe myself in one word, and that's what I use, glue. But actually, thinking about it, I do think that the LGBTQ+ community is glue. We hold each other together. We're there for each other. We've got each other's backs. You both reference it in both the conversations I have with you about the strength of us, the powerfulness of us. And I feel it every day. I feel it on Pride every year. I feel it on Twitter when I see everyone backing each other. I feel it in magazine covers that now see body positivity. And just the community, I think, is glue. We hold each other together and we're there for each other when things are absent. So I think that is the word that I would describe us, glue, which is fantastic.
A huge thank you to Daniel for joining us today. How did you find that, Daniel?
It was good. I found it very cathartic and nice to actually chat about it and hear your opinions as well. It was really nice, actually. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And it's about damn time, isn't it? You've been waiting to jump on Queer Talk. I told you, we have to wait for the right moment in the right time.
This feels like the right moment.
It does. I'm excited for your Queer Talk Lives coming back. That's exciting.
Yes, on Saturday, part of London Podcast Festival. So excited for that.
I'm excited too.
So make sure you check out Daniel's new book, Gay Man Talking. We will leave the links to pre-order, order, buy, review in the episode description. And do not forget to let us know that you have listened to the show on socials. We are on Instagram at @queer_talk and on Twitter, we are @queertalk_. Until next time.
Bye. Bye.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.